Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Years ago, the term big data came into the public consciousness. We knew that our digital devices, our credit card swipes, our medical records, and more were being collected, but gradually it dawned on us that all of that information could be collated and harvested, sometimes for our benefit, sometimes not. Now, another, even more powerful aspect of this new age is emerging: artificial intelligence. The term was coined in the 1950s, but the technology to make it possible is a recent development. And like big data, AI has the potential to be both beneficial and harmful at the same time. And artificial intelligence is quickly becoming ubiquitous. In November of 2022, OpenAI released a demo of ChatGPT. Within days, over 1 million users were signed up. Today, OpenAI has enmeshed itself in everything from self-driving cars to K-12 classrooms. North Carolina healthcare systems are among the first in the country to use generative AI. The fields of medicine and medical research are one area where the benefits of AI could be substantial, but some state legislators want more regulation around the technology. So today, we're going to take a closer look at the intersection of artificial intelligence and healthcare. And we're joined by Jordan Archer, Chief Operating Officer for Trion Medical Partners. Tucker Burks is a board member and senior pathologist for CPG Pathology. And Michelle Crouch covers healthcare for the Charlotte Ledger and NC Health News. Thank you all for being here. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
It's radio. You got to talk. So, Michelle, let me start with you for a 30,000-foot view on all of this. When did the use of artificial intelligence in medicine begin, and how many different ways is it being used?
Well, that is the big question, isn't it? So it's really started a couple of years ago, but it's just taking off exponentially in the last few years. And it's being used in many, many different ways. It's being used to help doctors with administrative tasks, like writing their summaries of a visit with a patient. It's being used to help doctors communicate with patients. So you might get an email that you think is from your doctor, but it might have been generated at least initially by AI. And, you know, probably one of the most exciting ways it's being used is to kind of predict health events and to detect conditions like cancer, perhaps more quickly and more accurately than a human doctor could detect those things. So that's very exciting for healthcare.
Yes, some of this sounds good. Some of this, I think, requires a little deeper conversation. And one of those things is something you just mentioned. And you also talked to our Marshall Terry on Morning Edition about this. You mentioned that some doctors ask for permission to record their conversations with parents, with patients, and then AI will comb that conversation for the nuggets, the gems of the conversation, and produce detailed notes that the doctor can later review and upload to the patient's health record. What do doctors who use this already have to say about this process? And were you able to talk to any patients about how they feel about this process?
Yes. So the doctors that I've talked to as a whole love these tools. They're called AI scribes or virtual scribes. And what the doctors love about them is that they don't have to sit and stare at their computer screen and type while they're interacting with patients. They like that they can look patients in the eye and really engage with them and be confident that what's happening is being recorded and transcribed for them to see later. And so doctors tell me, one doctor told me that she is saving about an hour a day of administrative time, because before she used to have to type notes while she was in there with the patient and then later come back and try to generate and remember what happened and put all of those details into a clinical summary. And now she already has a draft of that summary ready to go. She can just review it and then hit submit if it's after she makes any changes.
So, Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you go
Well,
ahead.
and then you also asked about patients' reactions. And so patients have had mixed reactions, as you can imagine. Some patients are very worried about their privacy and their data. And so that is a big concern. A survey showed about 70% of patients, are worried about privacy when it comes to these tools. And then they also worry about the accuracy of these things. I mean, we are really relying on doctors to ensure that they're accurate, to review them
Yeah.
closely, and to make any necessary changes. And research has shown that they do make mistakes.
I want to come back to that. Jordan is with us. Jordan Archer is the COO of Trion Medical Partners, which is one of the largest independent medical practices in the region. But you are in partnership, as I understand it, Jordan, with Athena Health, which makes AI automation tools available on a cloud-based platform. So put that in English. What exactly does this do for your physicians? How does it improve the services that they're able to provide?
Yeah, Mike. So I would tie all that back to sort of interoperability. You saw a massive push years ago from our EHRs to greater interop. And that's just the basic sort of thesis that sharing patient records amongst a wide variety of clinicians would get easier, sort of in an effort to better coordinate care. Now, while I think the EHR continuum has drastically widened, and you've got some premier players in the market. Athena, which we are on, is a cloud-based system, and so we've seen a rapid development of interoperability with Athena and other local players, such as Epic and Cerner, especially those predominant here in the Charlotte market. And so, the cloud-based functionality really allows us to coordinate care in the best manner possible. So think about, we'll take Michelle for example. Us having access to Michelle's record after she leaves the hospital or the emergency room in an effort to better coordinate that care. And so we're not searching around looking for records or trying to contact an administrative person at Novant, for example.
But
That
is
record is
but
just,
but is that AI, is that AI based, or is that simply having access of to a big data of a server farm that has all this data stored on it?
yeah, that is not AI based. That is pure just patient sharing of records. And so when you think about sort of Athena and the cloud-based space as it relates to AI, they've made rapid advancement, as have other EHRs, in sort of the administrative reduction. But you really got to make a distinction between process automation and AI. And so we can dive into that a little bit deeper. But I would say, from the patient standpoint, what you're really going to see as it relates to AI advancement up front is not necessarily this predictive analysis. I do think that'll come, and it started to come in certain modalities such as radiology. But what I think you'll see up front is more process automation that's supported by AI that patients really don't see or feel, but that helps reduce administrative burden that hopefully leads to, greater relationships with the patient and the physician, which at Trion is what fundamentally we're based on.
So Michelle and I were talking a moment ago about AI creating a record of patient conversations with doctors, and then that AI extracting the nuggets of importance out and helping them generate reports for the patient's health record. As I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jordan, Athena Health claims that 39% of physicians believe that AI can reduce administrative burdens and streamline administrative tasks, making things more efficient and freeing up time. But the way you use it, as I understand, is more focused at the moment on healthcare, health insurance claim filing. It reduces the time it takes to file the claim. It reduces errors in coding and speeding up payment to the practice from insurance companies. So do you see the use of AI as more of a benefit to the bottom line, or as a way to give patients or more time, well, patients more time with physicians?
Yeah, Mike. I mean, it's pretty simple for Trion at this point as it relates to AI. I mean, it's a buzzword, but here we really make sure that we're using it in places that shouldn't scare patients. We again fundamentally are built on the thesis that stronger relationships will build better health. It always comes back to the patients for us. Remember, that the practice of medicine is forged on relationships. And so the way that we are sort of thinking about AI at this moment is like you said, is administrative function that then allows the physician or the clinician to spend, more time with the patient. So think of things like prior authorizations. We've put in a tool here at Tryon that's automated roughly 90 to 95% of our prior authorization process. Prior to that, a massively burdensome process for our clinicians, and about 90 to 95% of that process is automated right now. That's one example. The second, to your point, I would say is in revenue cycle, automating the claims process on the back end for more accurate claim submission. We are, as Michelle talked about already, also exploring sort of the ambient listening world. We've piloted a couple of different platforms here at Tryon. Again, as Michelle mentioned, data and privacy is paramount. We go through a really rigorous due diligence process for anything that we put in here, even if it's on a pilot basis. But that ambient listening is really going to be sort of the crux of efficient facilitation of that patient visit, I would say, for the next 3 to 5 years. The tools are a bit clunky right now. You've seen your premier ones kind of out in front, DAX, which is a Nuance product owned by Microsoft that's really taken off, and some others in the marketplace. But some of them are still clunky. And what I would say is that those ambient listening tools are not meant, again, to scare the patient, but they're meant to facilitate the relationship. And so again, when we think about what we're doing here at Tryon, it's all I would say does have some AI components to it, but it's really on this sort of process automation to further reduce the administrivia of our clinicians and our care teams, and so that they can spend more time with the patient and delivering the care for them.
There is another way, or several other ways, that this is being used, and Dr. Tucker Burks knows them because he's a pathologist. In addition to being a gynecologic and urologic pathologist, you're and board member of CPG Pathology, Tucker, you are the IT committee chairman there. And I've seen numerous stories on the promise that AI holds in your field and the ability to apparently spot problems on everything from x-rays to CAT scans to pathological slides, if that's the right term, where you smear something on a slide and you look at it through a microscope. Evidently, AI can do it quicker, better in some cases than physicians. How would you describe how you and other professionals are using AI in diagnoses and treatment?
Well, I would first say that we're in the early phases of this undertaking. It's been, when I say we, I mean the field are in early phases. The first adopters were institutions like Memorial Sloan Kettering and Ohio State University and other leading huge medical operations. We are just now at the threshold to be able to begin to use the first thing that is necessary, and that is digital pathology. If you can't have a digitized image, you can't do artificial intelligence. So that process is something that we will be stepping into, we believe, this year. But in terms of what's happening and what's been discovered, is that easily the three legs of what are trying to be accomplished, diagnostic accuracy, laboratory operations improvements, and improving patient care, those things are already starting to be realized through digital pathology and artificial intelligence. I have to tell, so I want to share with you my
Hold that thought.
concern.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We have to take a break. You can share that concern when we come back, which we'll do in 90 seconds. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the intersection of artificial intelligence and medical care and science. Michelle Crouch covers healthcare for the Charlotte Ledger and NC Healthcare, or Health News, rather, excuse me. Jordan Archer's with us. He's the COO of Trion Medical Partners. And Dr. Tucker Burks is a board member and the senior pathologist at CPG Pathology. And we were talking about how it's being used, artificial intelligence, in pathology at the moment, and you had some concerns that you wanted to talk about.
Well, let's go back in time to the mid-1800s. The father of pathology is considered to be Rudolf Virchow, and he had a duality of interests. One was medicine and the other was politics, and the point that he once made was that medicine is a social science, and politics is nothing else but a medicine on a large scale. And that reminds us that medicine is more than what happens in a clinical office and in the operating room. It's also policies that affect healthcare throughout the community and throughout this country and the world. And so we can't overlook the impact of that. And I bring this up because over a decade ago, I shared with folks at a regional conference the CAP workforce numbers, which pointed to an inflection point where the supply of pathologists was going to begin lagging significantly behind the demand for pathologists. And as it turns out, it's not unique for pathologists, this demand. So the question is, and that I posed to the group at that time was, how are we going to provide diagnostic support in a situation where patients are older, the diseases are more complex, and we have fewer physicians, pathologists, and others to take care of that demand? We're going to have to find a way to close that gap.
And is this the way? Is AI the way?
Well, what we are seeing is that there are efficiencies in the combination of digital and digital pathology and artificial intelligence, that efficiencies of 20% is a general number that's used, which helps in this endeavor. But just one last point about my concern that I brought up is that some of this funding, which that funds residency training, may be under threat because it comes, that funding, a large part of it comes from Medicare, Medicaid, and the VA system. So we have to find a way to take care of our future generations right now and start planning on that and look toward ways to make things more efficient. And as Jordan said, you know, they are trying to free up time for clinicians to do clinical work. We are going to use artificial intelligence so that we're not doing iterative, time-consuming tasks, and rather be able to focus on our highly specialized practice, which is then the value that we bring to wherever we go.
So, getting back to the fact that this could fill the gaps that are being created by a lack of pathologists, and we know that there's shortages of nurses and other areas of medicine that are facing shortages, and maybe AI can step into the breach here. But the Journal of Clinical Pathology, published in BMJ, which is a weekly peer-reviewed medical journal by the British Medical Association, says, quote, "The dramatic rise in the development and application of artificial intelligence in pathology is expected to continue and reshape the field." And they say that this should be considered a paradigm shift. Is that how you view it? Is it a way to free up time for the doctors that we have now? Is it a way to step into the gap of the shortage of pathologists we may have in the future? And is it more accurate?
It's yes to all three. To some degree, the last point about accuracy or diagnostic accuracy, that's still being tested, but has proven in some situations to be more accurate, depending on what the test or the question is.
Michelle.
Yes, and I just want to point out that while it's taking a little longer to put this in place with pathology because of the need for the digital pathology, This is happening right now every day in our Charlotte hospitals. I mean, when you go to a Novant emergency room right now and you have any kind of digital scan, a CAT scan, an MRI, an X-ray, AI tools are quickly analyzing those scans and sending an alert to doctors when they find something very concerning, whether it's a brain bleed, a stroke, a broken neck. And that's allowing those doctors to prioritize those patients and ensure that they're getting care more quickly because those are the most concerning cases. And so I think it's really interesting the way that this tool is already allowing doctors to be more efficient, to prioritize the cases that are the most important and the most serious.
Plus, AI, and we've talked about this in other aspects of computer technology, they don't take a day off. They don't need to rest. They don't need to sleep. AI can work 24/7 of 365. It is not encumbered by feeling anxiety or feeling emotions. It knows what it knows, and that's all that it knows. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. It also, it seems to me, to be able to pair costs. And Jordan, you say that artificial intelligence, your use of artificial intelligence at Trion Medical Partners has already paired your costs by as much as 40%. That's substantial. So is the difference being made up in the cost of the AI service that you use? In other words, is once you've paid for the service, is it relatively paid for, or is some of those savings being realized in some overall reduction of healthcare costs to patients and to insurance companies?
Yeah, Mike, exactly. A little bit of all of the above. Just for some context, the AMA, this is sort of their analyses, but estimates that Medicare physician payments have only risen about 11% between 2001 and 2021, while our practice expenses during that same exact time period are roughly up 40%. So the business of healthcare has just gotten tough. Reimbursements have come down, and to the extent that your commercial contracts are based on your Medicare payables, those have come down as well. And expenses have just climbed astronomically and have been further accelerated in the post-pandemic world. However, we at Trion are committed to ensuring that care does not waver due to those macro trends. And so, yes, some of the sort of process automation things that we have put into place, whether that be based on AI or really just process oriented, have allowed us to sort of curb the cost trend of providing care, which then, yes, shows up in our cost of doing business and all of the above. I think, though, what I want to underline is again, the business of healthcare has gotten to the point where if you do not control your spend, you will be in trouble unless the federal government and commercial insurers decides to sort of all of a sudden change tide. In the face of, again, those macro trends, we feel unbelievably comfortable with the foundation of our practice, and that is, again, built on patients and the care that we provide. So because of the macro trends, we're always trying to find ways to automate where we can. Now, again, as we've talked about, there's risks associated with doing that. We feel like a really, really strong due diligence process to make sure that the care is never compromised. But yes, we are always looking for ways to automate redundant processes that maybe in a prior life required a human touch or whatever it may be. And so, yes, curbing the cost of operationally delivering care is paramount, sort of in this day and age.
So Tucker, since we've trained these computers essentially to diagnose or to look at X-rays and CAT scans and other things, and say this is what's wrong, do doctors how much confidence do doctors have? Do they have to go back and check the work of the computer and agree with that work, or do they just take it on face value that the computer is fairly accurate and I don't have to go back and double check?
Currently, it's a check back for sure. I'll just use prostate biopsy studies. It's one of the most common uses of AI. That they do not sign out the computer system. Whatever the vendor has provided does not sign out anything. So it's assistive or augmented kind of way of getting your work done. No, it's not. But will there come a time? Very likely there will come a time down the road where that does happen. I'll give you an example of how technology has impacted the laboratory. When you see something called a complete blood count on your bill or on your own EMR information, you're looking at something that is done over and over and over many times in the laboratory. Historically, that required an individual to take a glass slide of a peripheral smear and make the counts manually with a clicker. Now, over 90% of those studies are done by an instrument, and that frees up the people that are highly trained who work in the laboratory to focus on the abnormals and what needs to be done with that. So this has been going on in pathology using leveraging technology over the years so that we can be more productive with the other people that we have to work with.
So human beings have to teach the computers what to look for. They have to say, this is an abnormal cell. This is what a cancer cell looks
That's
like.
right.
And the computer can then spot it. As the computer spot, and sometimes they spot it more accurately than physicians because I don't know, you tell me why, but I've read that is the case. Does the machine then learn how to find things on its own over time? Does it teach itself?
Now, these improvements over diagnostic accuracy are restricted to certain circumstances, but I'm sorry, I forgot the focal point of your
Well,
question.
the question is, does it teach, once you teach the
Oh,
computer
yeah.
what to look for, does it teach
Right.
itself? Does it learn on its own and say, well, this is also one, so I'll put that into my system?
Right. It depends on the type of artificial intelligence that's being utilized, whether it's non-generative or generative. Generative would be an example, like ChatGPT, which can use information from other types of sources, whether it's text or image or whatever. Ultimately, there will come a time when it will be suitable for those to operate independently, and they will be able to. The scientists that are working in this are brilliant, and what they are producing with their undertakings is taking us down toward that path. But we consider that to be, sometime, further down the road.
So, Michelle, I want to get back to the how we started this conversation, where the doctor comes into the office, perhaps after the nurse has taken your blood and your blood pressure, et cetera, and starts to talk to you about your health concerns and maybe the reason that you came in. And he has with him his phone, and he asks you if he can record the conversation, and that's so that it can be AI can come in and extract the nuggets and produce his notes for him. These phone apps that listen in on these conversations are not associated with Siri or Alexa or even Google. These are special apps that the doctor has because they're not connected to the big database cloud in the sky. Is that correct?
Well, they're not connected to the doctor's personal Siri, but they are cloud-based systems that are secured with biometrics and passwords and all of the security that you would need. But they're saving this, they're saving the recording, they're saving the notes in the cloud, and then that's translating over to the computer where the doctor can review the notes later in the day.
And they are as secure as anything else in the cloud may
Exactly.
be. You report that sometimes there are concerns that develop over the accuracy of the notes that this app may produce because they are normalized to listen for standard English. And if you have an accent or you mumble or your articulation is not as good as others, it has difficulty understanding. What are the implications of that?
Well, studies have shown that error rates for black speakers, for example, are twice as high as for white speakers. They've also found problems with, like you said, people who speak English as a second language or have an accent. And so that's one problem. Perhaps Perhaps another problem that people are very concerned about is that these tools can also fabricate content. So if there's a lot of background noise, or if there's a big gap in the conversation for some reason, and researchers really don't understand why, sometimes they just make things up. And so this is a big concern that researchers are looking into. For example, I talked to a Cornell University researcher who was reviewing these notes from different clinical appointments, comparing them to the recordings. And she found that at one point, the AI tool invented a non-existent medication called hyperactivated antibiotics and just dropped that into the note. And so I think what this shows that until we perfect these tools, it is really essential for physicians to be reviewing these notes carefully and closely for accuracy and correcting mistakes.
The buck stops, it seems to me, with the physician in the room. Do we know if they always check? I guess they have to check because it produces the notes. One would think that the doctor would then look over the notes and
They
see
do
that.
have to check. Yeah, they can't. The notes are not submitted into the patient's chart until after the doctor has reviewed them and clicked submit. Before that, they're just a draft.
So AI also has, and we've talked a little bit about this, Tucker, the ability to read X-rays and perhaps quicker and more accurately than a radiologist might be able to, and maybe they can look at pathology slides and possibly spot dangers more quickly too. How accurate have pathologists and radiologists found these AI tools to be? How worried are they about AI taking their jobs?
I would say, based on everything I've already said, that's not coming right around the corner just because the demand is there, and we're just going to be doing our best job to keep up with taking care of patients, even with the assistance of artificial intelligence, et cetera. But certainly, there will come a time when jobs will not be necessary, which right now would be a good thing if we really had full out artificial intelligence at our disposal. Then all of our subspecialists at CPG could be focusing on the challenging cases that are out there that need to have a diagnosis. It keeps them from counting cells, keeps them from counting mitotic figures, which are vital in the assessment of some of these cases, but very time consuming. I think right now the feeling is that any assistance we can get right now is welcome, and we're looking forward to following this through. I just would say one more thing, and that is
Very
that
quickly.
this is just another lens, another type of advancement in our field, whether it's ultrastructural or molecular diagnostics.
And of course, change is difficult, particularly for humans, not so much for computers. And we'll talk about if there's any resistance to this from physicians when we come back at Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the intersection of artificial intelligence and its use in medicine with Dr. Tucker Burks, board member and senior pathologist at CPG Pathology. Jordan Archer is COO of Trion Medical Partners. And Michelle Crouch reports on all this for the Charlotte Ledger and for NC Health News. Computers and robotics and artificial intelligence are going to take human jobs. Even Elon Musk has said maybe it's time for exploring a universal income because there aren't going to be any jobs. And Jordan, you mentioned earlier in this conversation that in your back office where insurance claims are being handled, 95% of the work that is being done at your organization is now automated by this artificial intelligence. It interfaces, it files the claims, it codes the treatment, it files the claims with the insurance company. How does that work, given that this is AI? It has to communicate with various entities at insurance companies that might still be staffed by humans. How does it work, and what is the end result?
Yeah, so yeah, two different areas at Tryon really where it's being deployed on the revenue cycle side, which is a little bit more process oriented. I'll take you back on the prior authorization side and really where that's coming out. So for example, a post technology, I would say the prior author process works now where the data is actually extracted from the EMR and then it's submitted to the payer. And again, as I mentioned, about 90 to 95% of that work is now automated because of that process. Where the AI comes in is it actually analyzes approval trends or red, sort of flags high-risk cases and predicts denials so that we on the front end and our clinicians can get ahead of, again, predicting denial so that we can coordinate care better for patients. And so again, as I think about where we're seeing it in the Tryon lens, it's again more on the process side that would be sort of visible and relatable to the patient, but on the back end, it really is supported by artificial intelligence. Mike, one thing I would sort of add and kind of venture off to for a minute here is we at Tryon are really, really focused in sort of the value-based care arena at this point. As I mentioned earlier, the fee-for-service business of healthcare has gotten really tough. It'll always be there. But more and more, we've seen the payers and the federal government sort of push us into value-based care agreements. And that is really rewarding us, Tryon, or the Tryon clinicians, for coordinating care. That's sort of simply put. And so what that means is allowing our physicians to be in a position where they can work top of license. For us on the business side, that means we've got to enable them with as much, sort of again, reduction of administrivia for them and their staff as possible so that they can spend more time with the patient. That allows them to help coordinate care to ensure that their referrals are going to places with high quality, with really good access, that are low cost, et cetera. And then on the back end, where that'll really sort of evolve to is from an AI standpoint, is the predictability of our highest risk population. So think frequent flyers to the emergency department, those that based on labs or comorbidities, whatever, are highest risk for hospital admission. Folks that we monitor on certain medications to make sure their medication adherence is on schedule and routine. So the predictability of AI in that space is really, really going to be palpable for Tryon as we get pushed further and further into these, again, shared savings or value-based care arrangements that are really less fee-for-service focused and really more coordination of care oriented. So I know that shared saving is sort of a buzzword and value-based care is a buzzword out in the market, but I would say here at Tryon, we have really, really headfirst in the deep end in this arena, just because we feel firmly that not only is it the future of healthcare, but it also is brings our clinicians back to, why they got into medicine, and that is really caring for patients in the
Well,
exam room. And yeah,
let
go ahead.
me talk about that. Let's go back to the doctor here. Doctors are highly educated. They get into the business for a reason. They're either scientists, and they really find all this very cool, or they really want to help individual patients, some more than others, I suppose. But the doctor for so long was God, maybe capital G, in many people's mind. But a recent MIT Harvard study found that when radiologists were shown AI predictions about the likelihood of disease, they often undervalued the AI input compared to their own judgment. The doctors stuck to their initial impression, even when the AI was correct, which led them to make less accurate diagnoses. So some pushback from doctors. Is anything similar happening in the pathology field? Are doctors welcoming this? Are they trustful or distrustful of it? Are they resentful of it?
There has been not quite the deployment that you've seen in radiology yet with this technology to really, gather sort of a profession-wide view toward this. We're still at the very early stages, so I can't really say, but the
How do you personally feel about it? You're a doctor.
well, the way I feel about it is it's essential. I'll just make one more comment about care, and that is when you look at the stresses on supply of diagnostic, let's just talk about diagnostic care or medical care throughout this next 15 years or so, the deficits that are already predicted are actually amplified when you start talking about non-metro or rural areas. And that's something that we at CPG are very interested in, is developing strategies to serve people in areas where they can't access quality care. And it would be the same care from a highly subspecialized group. So that's what I see us value, adding value or getting value from AI, is being able to extend our care to other areas that may not readily have it.
Michelle, we have all found ourselves calling customer service lines for every business you can name, including banks and others, and found ourselves entangled in phone trees where they ask you to tell them what you want and then don't understand what the heck you're talking about or don't give you options to which you can respond in any intelligent way, and it can be extremely frustrating. And now you say some medical practices are using AI to make phone calls to patients and follow up with them on the outcome of various procedures. You say in these cases, the robot can, for lack of a better term, the robot can answer patient questions. It's reduced the volume of patient calls in some cases by as much as 70%. But it's still not a human being. How much confidence do physicians have that the robot isn't overlooking something or misunderstanding something or giving out incorrect advice or advice that a human doctor might moderate in some way because they have both the knowledge and the experience and the empathy?
Well, Mike, the system that you're talking about, they're actually not calling patients. They're texting with them. And
Same
Ortho
thing.
Carolina is I'm just, they're texting with them. And so Ortho Carolina is one of the big practices that's using a system like this called Medical Brain. And what it does is it reaches out and checks in on patients who've had a hip or a knee replacement and asks them how they're doing, do they have any swelling? The same questions that they would hire somebody to reach out and ask a patient are now being asked through this text system. But this system is tightly controlled. AI is not coming up with its own answers. They have pre-formatted answers to common questions that they get from patients. And the system is trained that if you have a question that it doesn't know the answer to, it refers you to the clinic and has you call in. But in many cases, the questions that patients are asking after one of these surgeries are the same every time. And so AI is able to handle all of those common questions. And if there's a question that hasn't been pre-programmed into the system, then the patient is directed to call the practice. And so in the case of Ortho Carolina, this system has reduced the number of phone calls and texts and messages into the system after a surgery by about 70%.
Jordan, like so many things in the digital sphere, regulation or the lack of regulation is a concern. And there are some medical devices that use AI that are highly regulated, like embedded cardiac defibrillators. But what about these other uses of artificial intelligence? Are any of them regulated by the government, by medical boards, by any entities outside of the companies that produce it?
Without being a healthcare a compliance attorney, Mike, the way I would answer that is we are just in the really, really early stages, and most of it is unregulated at this point. The way I'll tie that back to the healthcare space is this: I do believe that the AI infusion into the space will be methodical, because at its core, we are dealing with patients here. So while I do think we'll see some rapid advancement across other industries with AI, and absolutely it will begin to infuse itself, as we've talked about here today, in the healthcare space, I do believe that further regulation will be coming, and for good reason. Again, we're dealing with human lives here. And so while I do think that we are on the path to greater automation and healthcare incorporation, AI incorporation into healthcare, I do think because we've got this unbelievable relationship with a patient and another human life. I do think you will see it be methodical, intentional, and at least that's the way we're thinking about it here at Triumph. But I do think you'll see on the horizon greater enhanced regulation to come.
So, Dr. Birx, during the Biden administration, the head of the FDA at the time, Robert Califf, told NPR that the field of artificial intelligence will be so big that his agency could not possibly hire enough people to regulate it on its own, and said that that made it very important to get the clinical community, the health systems, the professions, the people we see for our healthcare very involved in developing an ecosystem of regulation, his words, where AI is constantly evaluated. Were you or any of your colleagues approached to be a part of anything like this, given the current administration's anti-regulatory approach to almost everything, do you see this effort continuing?
That was great advice that the gentleman provided for this. Certainly AI systems are not a set it and forget it type system. Things change, treatments change. That means the data should change. You can't be running data from 20 years ago and expect the results to be accurate in the current state. So there is going to need to be oversight, whether it's called regulation or not. And we do in pathology, we do have processes that are already in place for other aspects of quality control and so forth. And I would imagine that the College of American Pathologists is going to insist on something down the road. So I don't have knowledge of that specifically, but it would be in
Well,
keeping
let
with
me
the.
ask you this. Does the government need to be involved in this, or is this something that the various medical professions, pathology, radiology, et cetera, can, because you all have your own organizations, that they can regulate on their own to safeguard not only the patients, but their own selves, because they could be sued for this?
I think there should be a role for federal oversight. I think that there's only so much that a society, a medical society, a pathology society can do. So in my world, yes, I know that that would be argued by others.
So, Michelle, North Carolina has no legislation addressing artificial intelligence and health care. Does any other state?
Yes, this is increasingly something that lawmakers are looking at in different states. So in Utah, for example, there's a law where providers have to tell you, they have to notify you if they're using AI and get your permission and allow you to opt out. Now, that's best practice. Most providers here are already doing that, but there's no requirement that they do it. In Georgia, they are looking at, not allowing AI in insurance denials, or allowing it, but requiring a human to also review any decisions. And so that's potential legislation in different states across the country. There's also states that have looked at, not allowing discriminatory algorithms that might discriminate against underrepresented groups. If you don't closely review the data that's being fed into these systems, bias can end up in some of these algorithms. And so, and then here in North Carolina, we do have one senator, Senator Bergen, who is especially concerned about liability. And this hits at the point that you were making a minute ago, Mike, which is if AI makes a mistake, who's responsible? Apparently, the contracts that many of these AI technology tools have with healthcare systems pretty much have a waiver that says, yes, you can use our tool, but if it makes a mistake, we are immune from liability. We are not responsible. And Senator Bergen is very worried about that and is looking at possible legislation to require liability, responsibility for these decisions.
And that throws the onus onto the healthcare provider and organizations like Trion Medical Partners. So I only have a minute left. How do the two of you feel about this? I'll start with you, Jordan.
I mean, listen, we anything that comes through our doors that even smells like AI goes through a rigorous due diligence process, not only with our medical malpractice carrier with a bunch of healthcare compliance attorneys involved, as well as our sort of cybersecurity and security teams. And so we've been very, very intentional, as I just mentioned, about how to incorporate this into our practice. We know that data security for patients is paramount, that AI can be a scary buzzword. Before our patients, but anybody that's listening that's a current or prospective patient of Trion should know that before anything is incorporated into our practice, it goes through again a really rigorous due diligence process to ensure
Okay.
that all are comfortable with its use.
Dr. Burks, very quickly.
This was a topic that was discussed 2 or 3 years ago, the last at the Association for Pathology Informatics. It's live, as far as I'm aware, so we will see how this develops.
Dr. Tucker Burks is a board member and senior pathologist at CPG Pathology. Jordan Archer is COO of Trion Medical Partners, and Michelle Crouch has written extensively about this topic in the Charlotte Ledger and NC Health News. She's a freelance journalist. Thank you all for the hour.
Thanks, Mike.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.